You're listening to an OTB AM podcast. You can watch the show or listen live every weekday morning from 7:45 AM. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream for more stuff just like this.
Good morning. It's April Fool's Day. They've allowed the two biggest fools involved in the off-the-ball family in here this morning. Myself, Maura Thrasa, joined by Anthony Miles from County Meath. Cathy Wilthor, I hear you're exhausted.
Ah, listen, please don't be throwing Irish at me this hour tomorrow. Let's just keep it to English. Let's just keep it simple. I've had the clocks going forward, Mother's Day, screaming children, and yeah, a nice journey in for me. But it's great. I'm all good. I'm all ready to go.
That clock going forward really did the number on people.
Did the number, and then whoever thought that actually Mother's Day afterwards, because you have to get up, you know, as a father, you're saying, no, you stay in bed, you take it easy. I'll get up with the kids. You enjoy
it. You're some saint one morning a year.
Exactly. But it is that extra hour. It's like, oh, it's a killer. It's a killer. Yeah, so I was up at, you know, real time, 5:15 yesterday, which was great fun. It was a long day, but it was a great day. It was great. A great day of sport.
It was. It was a great day of sport. I'm really glad that you were actually able to stay awake for the great day of sport. Because yes. I'd be really sad to hear you were back in bed again by 10:30 in the morning and leave herself to mind the children for the rest of the day.
Yeah, I tried that. Didn't work.
And it was a great day of sport because, of course, the big thing was all the league final activity in Croke Park. We had also lots of other action in other sports. But the big thing was for me, I suppose, I was up at Croke Park yesterday at the triple header and Mayo won. And I went into the Croke Park Hotel afterwards, frozen to the bone after doing... any violins? Did anybody hire any violins to come play for me today?
No, I don't think so.
Frozen to the bone, into the Croke Park Hotel. The first person I bump into, Kevin Kilbane, wearing a Mayo top. Little zip-up Mayo top, looking as happy. Smile from here to here. I actually got a bit of a lift up like this. And he was full of joy.
He's probably still there.
Chances are.
Yeah.
Kevin Kilbane, if you want to let us know where you are. And then got my drink, went over and met my friends, and then on my way out of the Croke Park Hotel, because I only went in for the one, on my way out, bumped into, oh, there's Kevin Kilbane's tweet. Well, that was great. Some performance by my OGA, and I couldn't be prouder. Roll on the championship. Now, he's probably already on the plane to New York. Hashtag New York.
He sent it early, 6:05, to be fair. He was clearing up the road for later on, just in case.
That was probably happened. I was after six by the time I got in. And then on my way out of the hotel, I bumped into poor Owen Sheehan, who's not even here today. He's so distraught.
Oh, listen. I was looking forward to coming in and having a bit of a rib off him, so it's a bit disappointing.
And he hasn't tweeted since Saturday.
Yeah.
What do you think that means?
I'd say he's... I'd say he might be taking, you know, a philosophical view on this, much like Peter Keane did. You know, but obviously, deep down, he's probably hurting a lot.
Well, he really is. I was talking to him, obviously, on my way out, and he said he was surprised at how hurt he was.
Oh.
Yeah. He didn't, because, you know, Yara, 'tis only the league, as they say in Kerry.
It is.
Only the league. But he was saying the same, but jeepers, it cut deep.
Yeah, well, I think when they reflect on it, I'd say they probably, you know, listen, Kerry always go into finals expecting to win them. And with the start they got, and they looked for the first 15, 20 minutes, similar to me the previous day, that they were going to open up Mayo. But Mayo got to handle on it, you know. But when they reflect, I think, and even when poor Alone reflects, he'll say, OK, you know, as Keane was mentioned in the papers, a number of his interviews, it was only two scores in it. You have a situation where very, very young team on the field at the end. Like, I mean, and I think it's probably his lack of bench and his lack of experience is costing him at the moment. But listen, that's just that's the way they've gone, you know.
Yeah, I think the way Owen put it, how did he say? He said, and you know Kerry people, that when they say things, they want to get a message out there. And what Owen was saying was, he said, there's no All-Ireland in them. I said, what? He goes, well, not this year, maybe next year. And that year felt like an eternity to Kerry people.
It does,
and I'm thinking, you guys, you don't know. And then there is me and my tweet now, because I couldn't help myself, because you know how I feel about that county.
Well...
Do you want to read that out? Because I can't.
Congratulations, Mayo. Got a nice little cup there. This is totes aux, though, because the last time Mayo won the league, Galway won the All-Ireland, just saying.
It's true.
I like your research to be able to... But did you just know that straight away, or did you have to
check it? Of course I knew it. Of course I knew it. And of course that was 2001. I don't want to go rubbing salt into the wound.
Yeah, thanks very much. I don't think you can be too... Like, I mean, I have some Mayo blood. My grandfather is from Mayo, so Ballycastle.
Ballycastle. Yeah, it's a lovely part of Mayo, actually. It's beautiful up there.
So we spent practically every summer down there, getting the legs ripped off us from the sand on the beach and the cold weather and just everything else. It was more torture for 2 weeks than a holiday. But
if your fortitude and strength.
Exactly. Yeah.
If egg you go sandwiches. To North Mayo and you survive there, you can do anything.
You're okay. It was good to see them win. But literally, you know, we were speaking off earlier, they fell across the line, you know, because although they should have had Kerry packed away and gone with probably 7-8 minutes to go, it was still touch and go right at the end. And only for young O'Sullivan got the cramp right at the end as he was chasing back. You could see the poor fella. I've been in that situation. I don't know if you have, I'm sure you have, but where the two calf muscles just go and you cannot move.
Yeah.
And you could see the pain. He knew the ball was going to go in. And fair play, Andy Moore, and obviously had the presence of mind to get his head up and just pop the pass in.
Just pop it in, yeah.
Yeah, I think Mayo were full value for their win, really, to be fair.
They were.
Yeah, they were. Now, Kerry, I think, with David Moore in the midfield, if and when they get him back, will be a different proposition because they need him in that engine room just for a bit of bulk and a bit of physicality.
And speaking of Mayo, obviously the most Mayo performances across the water, Liverpool. They also snuck a win.
You're killing me this morning. This is April Fool. It's not. I don't know. I am the fool here. Yeah, I can't. Well, Spurs did a good old Spurs on it. I'm a Spurs fan, and I believe you're a Klopp fan.
I'm a huge Klopp fan.
Are you a Red fan as well? Or
he's nearly converted me.
Okay.
Now I'd follow Jurgen Klopp anywhere, I have to say. Okay. So yeah, I just think Jurgen Klopp, I just love his attitude. I just love the way he brings just this joy to it. Like there was no joy in Liverpool football for so long. Do you know what I mean? He's just so happy.
Did you see his celebration, on field celebration?
That's the best part.
Yeah. I thought he'll dislocate his right shoulder one of these days. He actually so aggressively thumps out.
I remember having this discussion actually with somebody where we were discussing Jurgen Klopp's shoulders, and anyway we came to the conclusion that he won't because he's really worked them.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll leave that. You are going deep down on this one again. I'm not sure about his gym routine, but I could. Yeah, it was a great win for them. I have to say, I thought Spurs deserved at least a draw. I thought they were, they had a serious amount of chances.
Yeah. They threw it away.
Well, listen, I'm a Spurs fan. That's something I hear quite regularly.
Yeah.
So it doesn't surprise me.
We will be discussing it later as well. We have lots of stuff coming up. It's a really busy morning, but we see our coming up menu there. We have our sports pages. We'll be doing that a bit. And then we have Horan and Moran. They rhyme. And at around 8:15, we'll be doing a GA Leagues review. You're here already. We'll get more out of that. We've got Ailish Considine from County Clare lighting it up down in Australia at the moment with their big win yesterday. We'll also have Alan Quinlan. He's coming in later as well. So we'll do the papers. Okay, Iva Rahim, here we have the Irish Independent. She's a great photo on the front page, actually, of Westport Rugby Football Club. They won the Connacht Rugby Women's Cup yesterday, and here they are after they accidentally broke it. It's a great photo, actually, by Oisin Kinnairy there. The back page, though, obviously a springboard for more, and you, obviously, if you're from County Mayo, that's exactly what we're going to be thinking. This is just the launch pad. It's just step one of Plan All-Ireland, which is what they're going to be thinking. Now, what have you got there?
Yeah, I just got a Mirror Sport, and we've got just more talk about Liverpool, obviously, you know, moving up yesterday. It's meant Toby Alderweireld goal and goal keeps Klopp's men in the hunt for title. Lloris, I see, has kind of put his hands up, said it was my fault, but yeah, anyway, as we said, just another slip up by Spurs, but gets Liverpool and City ever closer. So we have another one there, may force be with us. So again, Mayo, as we said, looking forward to the Championship.
Here's the Irish Examiner. They actually had a very good pull out today, and here's a great photo up for the cup, and they're saying define Mayo savour silverware after 18 years of frustration. There's plenty of write up. There's a lot of write up as well about the rugby inside there as well today, which Alan Quinlan will be able to go through with us later.
Yeah, a bit of more Liverpool stuff in the Herald Sport, and we also have some stuff on the old firm clash, which I believe, I didn't actually see the game, but I believe it was fiery,
so
to
I hear.
Say the least.
Yeah, so I hear. I was getting the updates in Croke Park. And here we have The Guardian, and obviously they're going to go at Liverpool as well. And they've a great photo there of just that goal going in. Liverpool lifeline, we deserved luck, says Klopp, as Howler keeps Reds in title hunt. Now, I have to say, I don't believe in luck. I think you make your own luck.
They got lucky yesterday.
They did, but they were only lucky because they were in the position to be lucky.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. They were lucky. I think they were very lucky. We've got the Racing Post here, and just a bit about Arsenal. Arsenal obviously playing versus Newcastle. They keep firing in the wins at home. Arsenal are doing okay, and then we obviously had just a bit more about Liverpool again. Interestingly enough, I think, you know, you've got a situation with Liverpool where they kind of went through that wobbly period there about 2 or 3 weeks ago, but they seem to be back on track now. You know, I think the tension got to them a bit. They all seem to be kind of playing within themselves. And as you say, they're a club that needs to kind of play with a smile on their face, and they seem to have that back yesterday.
I think as well, though, like that kind of, people say the pressure and stuff, but like it's a long season. It's hard to be top of your game all the time, even the best, because City had their own kind of slump there just around Christmas time.
Yeah.
So I don't know. The Daily Telegraph here, obviously, again, it's more Liverpool celebrating Mo Salah there. Howler by goalkeeper Hans Klopsman, advantage in one of the greatest title races ever. And isn't that the best thing about it at all?
It is, yeah.
No,
it is fantastic. Yeah, it's a great title race. And it is, as you say, it's you know, it's something that I even actually noticed watching the GAA over the weekend. There's so much analysis going into games now, and there's so much kind of work being done on the sideline that games can change so long. Like, I mean, a GAA match now seems like a very long game, you know, 70, nearly 80 minutes.
They mostly are now.
So if you're ahead after even 25 and you're doing really well, the game can turn by the 50 minutes so easily. You know, like, I mean, you look at some of the games where teams are well out ahead, the management have a look, they change some tactics, they alter some stuff. And then it switches. And obviously fitness and conditioning and all that stuff, because it is a long, long game now. And it's getting closer to that soccer kind of idea that you're playing for, you know, an hour and 40 maybe, which is a hell of a long period when you think of it. Like
anything can
happen in that. And to keep that focus going through for all the amount of games and for obviously the teams to be so close at the top, it's been a fantastic league this year.
Yeah, it really, really has. And we're still not even there at the end yet. And this is actually a great headline here in the Star. April Pool's Day. Obviously somebody is going to go with it. I'm glad the Star went with it.
Yeah, great one. Absolutely.
Now, what else you got?
Last one for me. I just have again, good old Lloris. he's getting fairly nailed this morning. Laura gift to Liverpool, and we have a little bit on the old FAI review into the controversy with Mr. Delaney, and we've got a little bit on Eddie O'Sullivan. Obviously, we have Anna Lynn later on the rugby, but a big weekend for the Irish provinces again.
And we have the Irish news there on screen. I don't have it here, but you can see it there. Jeez, my eyesight is totally failing me. I can barely make that out.
He's very influential in a lot of areas. Murphy.
Oh, let's talk about Michael Murphy. Oh, yes.
Michael Murphy. You know, we had a conversation here a couple of weeks ago about the top 15 players. We were actually just talking about the top 10 players, should they say. And I had Murphy last year, and you know, because he hasn't played and stuff like that, and the guys were arguing, well, should he be in, should he not be in, but he was absolutely...
Oh, well, he made all the difference. This always comes back to me and my suffering, doesn't it? But I was up in Ballybuffet a few weeks ago and they were playing Armagh, and he made all the difference. That was the worst night ever weather-wise. It was horrific. Like, it was, I don't know what, this cloud just followed me all throughout the league. Everywhere I went, there was just wind, rain, howling. But Michael Murphy came on, and once he came on, Donegal got that goal. That was the difference.
He retired me, actually. I don't mind saying it. If we're going to let all our tail of woes out... Yeah, we played
my back on my couch here now, Navin. Tell me.
We played them in Navin, I think, in it was one of Banty's years. I can't remember. My memory is gone. And I was full back, he was full forward, and he basically retired me.
I got the hook
with about 15 minutes ago. I was on a yellow and a tick. And I was purely just trying to slow him down. He's actually like he's obviously he's a monster of a man, but he is quick. You know, he has everything. I remember he kicked a point against me that day where I had him. I knew he was going to kick it on his right foot, but he threw the ball so far away from himself and hooked his body around it that, like, I literally got the top of my finger to it, and he hit it from about way outside the 50 and sailed it over. And I remember just, as I was getting up off the ground, I just went, yeah.
And when you say when you were hooked and you were taken off and you were walking away, what was your thought process? Do you remember?
Because I was kind of in and out of the team. It was one of my last years and there was a new management team involved. And
who was managing then again?
Banty.
Easier, okay.
Yeah, McEnany was involved. And I was dropped for the next game, which was against Kildare. And I remember having a conversation with Liam Harnan about it. And I was like, you know, what? And he was like, well, you did this and this. And I was like, he's pretty good, this fella. You know, like, man, give me a break.
You?
I was like, I think he could be a star in the making. Because all I could see was this young lad just cleaning me out, you know.
What age have you been then?
He was probably
12,
on the go.
13.
Yeah, about 16, I think. About 16. No, he was on. He was probably on the scene just a couple of years, but yeah. And everyone knew he was good. But he still hadn't really made. I think what year? I think it was maybe 2012. Yeah, but he's a bit special.
He is. No, he's brilliant. Actually, speaking of special players, I have your top 10 footballers, your power rankings here up in front of me here. Anyone you change now on a moment of reflection after the weekend?
Absolutely. Well, you have to have him in. Absolutely, you have to have him in. Yeah, yeah, he definitely comes in.
So who do you take out?
Oh, that's a tricky one. Well, O'Connor, I'm delighted I had Dermot O'Connor in because I just think after the weekend he has absolutely... you know, rubbers are stamped that one. Does Keoghan come out? I can't do it.
But you have, if you're going to put Michael Murphy in, you have to take somebody out. Would you take Conor McManus out?
But again, you know, we could see him in a couple of weeks and everyone's like, you can't take him
out.
But
if you're to go on form and Manus' form hasn't been great.
On form, you probably would take McManus out and slip Murphy in.
I've just forced you to push Conor McManus out of the thing. You're exactly, going to blame me if that wasn't you.
I'm surprised you didn't push for O'Connor there, considering your Mayo ire this morning.
My God. Hang me out to dry. Continue with your papers there.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's it for me.
And you
finish
your papers. Okay, yeah, so back to this. Okay, fine. Okay, so you've decided you're dumping Conor McManus, despite the fact that he's one of the best forwards we've ever seen in our lives. You're dumping him out of your list.
It's him or Morgan.
Wow. But not Morgan.
But I love having a keeper in there. You have to have a keeper.
Keepers are so important now.
I wasn't that overly impressed, and people are going to go, like, I mean, O'Shea and Clifford. Clifford was excellent at the weekend, and both of them were good from a forward perspective of, you know, going forward. But it's something that I kind of watched Clifford over the last number of weeks. His work rate, you know, I know it was flagged a little bit about his work rate going back, but there was a couple of times where he just didn't chase Harrison yesterday.
Yeah.
He kind of had him. There was a ball in the second half. It was kind of at his feet. And he went to get it and he stumbled over it and he kind of just stood up and just let it happen. And Mayo got a very good score from it. And I remember, you know, it's something he'll learn and he'll have to learn. But at the same time, do you want a guy like that chasing up and down the pitch? No, you don't. But even for those first kind of 5 or 10 yards, he needs to put a little bit more of an effort in. And at vital times, now, still, you know, his ability, like the solo for the goal where he knew he was going to double bounce it and his presence of mind there just to actually get his flick on it and like that was absolutely brilliant. Like that's happening in a split second with a man right on his shoulder, lots of bodies going on. Like to slow it down and just watch it is absolute perfection. You know, it's brilliant from such a young guy.
Of course though, Mayo will say perfection or not, they're the big story. They're celebrating. They're probably still celebrating this morning. And we did actually manage to get some audio. I think we've got who have we got? I think is it Andy Moran or James Horan? James Horan, yes. And then we've Lee Keegan as well.
I think overall we were strong and should have won the game by more. If I'm honest, but you know, even in that 10 minutes, we were dominating possession and we were driving forward. I thought our condition or fitness was good, but our attitude was really good. But within that 10 minutes, there was still a chance for David Clifford to get a score. But that's the way it goes. You know, it's games with Kerry are they're up and down, they're end to end, and that game was a crazy, crazy enough type of game today. So there'll always be close moments. You know, I thought James Carr could have had a penalty. I thought David Clifford was probably unlucky not to get the goal. You know, so that it balances out. But I think overall we were strong today and deserved the victory.
Aidan O'Shea's distribution was pretty immense. Matthew Ryan was good beside him as well.
Yeah, they were up against it in the first half, but I thought in the second half when needed they came very, very strong. And Matty's very mobile and has a habit of ghosting in for key scores. But Aidan O'Shea is playing great football and getting better and better. So. Just delighted, but you know, Chris Barrett today, I thought his positional and aggression going for the ball was very strong. Keith Higgins as well. Some of those guys that have toiled, I thought they were really strong today when needed.
Is the most satisfying thing after this league campaign not only that you have the trophy, not only that you've got a big win in Croke Park, but you've got a bit more depth to your squad now? I mean, there's, you know, real competition for places.
There is, and there's nothing like a couple of wins to, you know, Killian and Keane Hanley, Shamie O'Shea, Jarkaff, and those guys will be chomping out to get in. And, you know, we've James Carr, we have Kieran Tracy, obviously Fionn McDonagh, Matty, and we've numbers of others that some of them we haven't seen yet that have been really, really good in training and working hard. So that gives a great platform for a team. So we're just delighted with how that's going at the moment.
I know you probably could have and should have won it by more, but the fact that you actually squeezed it out in a final in Croke Park, that might actually be worth more to you as a team, given the heartbreak that you've gone through in finals.
Definitely. I suppose we've been called resilient for long enough, and you can only sometimes you get sick of that resilience. You want to have a bit of gold beside your name as well. So definitely when we got back to it, or Kerry got back to win a point, you know, that could have been that feeling, them doubts that come back again, saying this is going to be another heartbreaking moment. Will Kerry go up and get another score? But I think, to be honest, just even playing out there, I thought we were very relaxed about it. I thought we put together some brilliant moves now, albeit that we tried ourselves to give Kerry as much opportunities too, which is frustrating. But, you know, Kieran Tracy could have taken an easy option, went for fists over the bar, one score game, they could have gone down and get a goal. So, you know, it's things like that where he had the confidence, he's doing a training behind the scenes, and he puts in the back of net and game over. And I think the way we saw it, the game as well, we had that bit of cuteness as well, which is important. So, I mean, today, yes, it's hugely satisfying, to be honest with you. I mean, we've done well against Kerry in the last 4 or 5 years. We're the only team to beat them twice this year in league. So, and to get a game of that magnitude and intensity today, going into the championship, is definitely going to bring us on a lot more than we need to be. So, listen, there's so many positives, but as we'd all talk today, there's a lot to work on as well. And as I was saying, competition for the next few weeks is going to be crazy. No one is safe in a spot. You've seen the way lads have played over the league. You talk about James McCormack, Fergie Boland's come in, Fionn McDonagh, all these guys, Aaron Cohen has come in. So, like, people are putting their hand up for positions and places for the New York game in 4 weeks' time. And that's the way it should be, that environment and that intensity.
Andy Moran, you've achieved a lot, almost everything with Mayo throughout your career. But today is a first, a national title in Croke Park.
Yeah, great feeling. Just said it already, here in the green and red of Mayo playing at the end of any game in Croke Park is lovely, but to Chairman's Cup there and pick up a cup, great start to his captaincy. And I suppose we don't have too many finals left in myself personally, so it's great to get one under the belt.
What was the difference today?
Youth. It's Joe, Kieran Tracy, if that was an older player going through on goal there, would he tap it over the bar? You know, I'd probably argue I'd have flicked it over the bar. That'd put us two up. That puts us four up, kills the game. Matthew Moran around the middle, Fionn McDonagh all through the National League, Michael Plunkett, Darren Cohen, James Carr just have been brilliant to our side, introducing us, really pushing us as senior players, and they've been just brilliant.
And when you say youth, do you mean their skills are better or different, or do you mean their mentality is better or different?
I think it's just young players' mentality are different. You know, when you play the percentages when you're that bit older, like I play the percentages inside. I suppose Keith probably does the same in terms of cornerback. You know, Aidan probably around the middle. But these fellas just come in and they're like when we were young fellas. They just, you know, they let it free and away they go.
And you won this game playing what I would call typical James Horan football.
What's that?
Just really good to watch, yeah. Hard running off the shoulder, yeah. Seeing when it's on, going long.
Yeah, and I mentioned a lot of guys there. I mentioned Matty, and I mentioned Fiona, I mentioned James Carr, Michael Plunkett. These guys can all move, you know, they can all run, and it's great to see. It's hard to keep up with. It's hard to keep up with at 35, but it's lovely to see, and they're just really, honestly now, wishing they're really good young fellas, good players. Really want to train, really want to do well, and it's been a huge positive to our setup.
And just before I let you go, it's probably a hard one to answer right now, but how important is this as a box to tick, to just, I don't know, just get a ghost out of the way, to debunk a myth that you can't win a final in Croke Park, you know?
It's not even that, it's if I'm being honest, if you ask me the 8 a.m. this morning, but I'd be saying it's a National League game, it's final, we'd love to win it. But you hear the music afterwards, you see the goal going in, and until you experience that, I don't really think you can imagine how important it is. And if I didn't experience it, I'd have never known it. But I'm very happy now that I've experienced it and seen it. And listen, we need to build now for the summer and try to go for the big one.
The Green and Red of Mayo is actually a beautiful song. It was actually really, really nice to watch that yesterday when that was coming out. And just because Mayo fans, they will travel, and Croke Park was really, really loud. And just you can hear it just when Andy Moran's talking there, the magic that that meant to him. And he was saying, you know, at 35, I mightn't have many left. I mean, who'd have thought he'd still be playing at 35?
Did someone from News Talk make you say that during the interval?
I really like the Saw Doctors.
It was. It actually, I'll take this one up. It actually was nice to hear.
It was. No, it was
and
lovely.
It is brilliant for him.
It was heartwarming.
Yeah. Like, I played against him and he was a half back.
Really?
Yeah, he played left and right half back for Mayo, like when he started. And it's an amazing transition to see him as you know, where he was over the last number of years, obviously at full forward. But it was brilliant for them yesterday. They you know, Horan's a smart customer. And for the last number of years, everyone was bemoaning the fact that they weren't finding enough people. They weren't finding enough new guys to really bring it in. And the team was looking a bit stale at the end of last year. But now, all of a sudden, he's injected some real pace and some players. Like, Ruan is a serious player. And it means that, you know, they can slot him into midfield. He's got legs in there where maybe Aidan doesn't have, although Aidan is playing really, really well. But he has those legs that he can tag a guy who's up and down, up and down. He's getting on the ends of things. And it also releases O'Connor then to do what he can do. And I have to say, I was mightily impressed by him. He was a real captain's part. He was so brave for the goal. He could have got absolutely cleaned out. And he never took his eyes off the ball, which is what's needed. So, no, it was good. And it is something, like, it's amazing to hear and to see the kind of outpouring of emotion from Mayo people that they finally just got a cup.
A cup, yeah.
You know?
When you consider, out of all counties, the way their fans travel, if any fans deserved a cup to celebrate, it probably was Mayo.
Like, I mean, I'd say it's a national day of celebration down there at this stage.
Even up yet, maybe not. But actually, that was the big difference, I think, with Mayo this year compared to previous years. The other way, they were always nearly there. They just didn't have the one or two. Whereas now, they have the depth. Like, we're looking at James Carr, Finn McDonough, Fergal Ball and Brian Reap. They were just amazing.
Yeah, no, they've got some great depth. And he's done it very well. You know, he didn't pile them all into the league all at once. You know, and you might get a bit of a kicking, you know, from a few teams. He kind of introduced them in twos and threes, which is the right way to do it. Like, there was times there, you know, even the last couple of weeks where he had Boyle at centre half back, and he was playing Keegan, and then he introduced a couple of guys around that. But
who do you think was the find of the league for him?
I think Ruan is very, very good. Mm. Like, I mean, from a midfield perspective, I'm watching him and I'm kind of going, wow, this lad could really be anything. You know, he has a pass. He's obviously got legs. He's well able to take a score. He's very level-headed. He's a big unit. And I think he complements, you know, a lot of stuff. They were really, really good around that middle yesterday. They were really good. Like, I mean, I was a bit disappointed in Barry, to be fair, with Kerry. You know, I just thought... They're young as well, and they really suffer from not having more. Because Aidan O'Shea is he has all that experience, and you know, when you're trying to, you come up against him first 15, 20 minutes physically. While if he's hitting you and hitting you and hitting you, it's going to start taking in your legs in the last 10, 12, 15 minutes, and that's what he did. He used his ability around there. He also put in some beautiful balls. He was a bit of a midfield general, really, yesterday. You know, he was very good with regard to tempo of the game. He had them running at times. He had delivering balls at times. And it was very evident in the second half. They actually kicked a lot more. And they said, let's put that Kerry full back line under a bit of pressure, which I think also needs a bit of work.
But on another day, let's remember, though, he did also have to leave due to two yellow cards. And that could be an issue, you know.
Yeah,
in another
game,
in another day, if you're up against Dublin, you don't want that happening. No, or even Kerry in August.
True, but when you're in that engine room, you are susceptible to that when you're playing at that on the edge. Like, I'm not saying he's playing right on the edge, but you have to be physical. You know, you're being around the pitch, and you know, a slight miss delay in a tackle, and all of a sudden, as you say, you could be on a yellow. It's.
I think he suffers as well from, and I don't mean to sound this way, but he sometimes maybe looks a bit clumsy. It's not that he's not, it's just because he's such a big man that I think if he falls over, if the arm goes a little bit, even an inch too far, it can look much worse than it might be in somebody who had shorter limbs.
Correct, yeah. And it's funny, if you flip it, I thought Tommy Welch suffered a bit of that in the second half, where he's so big and physical that when he's coming out and grabbing balls and kind of hitting away smaller defenders... He had a few decisions against him yesterday. Where I was kind of going, he's just big man, you know. Like, I mean, and he's actually just using his physicality, and guys were getting, he was getting frees given against him. So, yeah, it's something that O'Shea would obviously have to be mindful of. But I think, as regards fines, I think Ruan, you know, you've got, like, I mean, it's settling up to be a really, really good year for Mayo. And people would be delighted for me to say that, because Dublin are obviously sitting there rubbing their hands in glee, obviously thinking, and I'm sure Galway would be sitting there and lots of other teams in Connacht and saying, right.
Connacht's going to be really interesting this year.
Very interesting.
More so than any of the other provinces.
I think the whole, like, actually, when you sit back, because I watched the Division 3 final, so I watched Derry Leitrim, Division 4, isn't it? And it was really, really good. You know, Derry were very impressive. Mm. And when you think back to, like, obviously Shalott Neal, see if Chrissy McCaig there just absolutely, you know, just doing what Chrissy McCaig can do at six. They had a brilliant kick-out strategy where they were just finding their men all the time. Some really, really good scores. And Leitrim were full value for what they've done.
Eight wins in a row, I think, for Derry. Tommy's after informing
eight
us
wins
here.
In a row. Yeah,
Tommy's the
yeah.
best producer ever. He knows everything all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he is. Yeah, eight wins in a row. They never shirked it. But even at saying that, you know, you look at the divisions, really, really close in most of them at the top. So there were some really close games. There was very few hammerings given out. Mm. You know, and when you look at Division 3. That was extremely close as well. So there's a lot of teams on the up, you know. There's a lot of teams, I think, there's very few teams I would feel that their star is really going down. There's an awful lot of teams who are improving and who are potentially getting better. So the qualifiers and all of that is going to get very, very interesting. And I think the Super 8s, but I think at the end of the day, it'll all go back down to panels. And I think you'll find, which we found with Meath, I think, on Saturday, that you really need to have five, if not six, guys that you can bring in and who will add something. And that's what the big teams have.
Yeah, and actually, speaking about Meads there, actually, it kind of felt like, and I might be wrong in saying this, that game on Saturday nearly was in the way of Andy McAtee. He could have done without it.
I don't know. You know, I've listened to him being interviewed, and you know, word around the county was obviously that they were going up to win it. We've championship kind of now starting this week, so we'll have two rounds of championship in Meath, which is kind of fairly hectic, and so that'll be a pretty busy April for those players, because there'll be no rest, you know, they'll be back in with their clubs and straight away two rounds of championship and then back in, because the inter-county championship is 6 weeks away for them. I think they were really, really, really impressive in the first 15, 20 minutes. Now, part of that is probably that Donegal were letting them kind of run at them. And then Donegal actually said, OK, we need to tag some certain guys. So they tagged up on Killian O'Sullivan. They tagged up on a few others. Meade lost Brian McMahon, who was causing a bit of havoc. He had 2 points on the board and he was causing damage with his pace. They brought Graeme Riley on, and Graeme, you know, has been massively brilliant for Meade over the years, but he's probably more of a 15, 20 minute man to bring in against a tiring defence. So, but again, I think it was the bench. They just probably need, which again is true, there's a few fellas there who've never played in Croke Park. There's guys there who are, you know, only playing for Meath for the first time this year. So all of that is going to be experience for them for the next day. And I don't think it's a conditioning thing. I saw some people saying, oh, Meath ran out of steam. I don't think it was that. They play a very, very high press, high energy game. And that first 15, 20 minutes, they probably could have been 10 or 11 points ahead, you know. And you probably would have said, actually, yeah, they're full value for that. Like, they were 8 up, and they easily could have been 11 or 12. Like, they missed a few handy shots. Mickey Newman had the goal disallowed, the one that for the square ball. But when you're playing that really high-press, high-energy game, you actually kind of need that cushion, because, to be fair, Donegal worked it out. They tagged some runners, they closed it down. And then I think Meade retreated, and they retreated a bit, probably at the wrong time, and they kind of brought Donegal onto them. Yeah. And then Murphy kicked in. Like, he moved out from full forward when they were under pressure, controlled the game out there, and then when they got back into it, he moved back into full forward and he just caused major damage in there.
Yeah, we're very good at throwing stuff back at people, you know. So we've got some of your tweets here from Saturday. Now, it's always interesting, you know, when basically...
This wasn't me, by the way. This was someone else.
Well, no, in fairness, you're not really going that different to what you're saying now. You know, sometimes you tweet stuff out and then your opinion might change on reflection. But I think it's more or less the same. So they started off killing Donegal, you say, by moving the ball fast and rewarding runners. Then they decided midway through that half to do individual stuff and allow Donegal back into it by being turned over and giving some cheap ball away. Need to get back to what was working so well. Now, that's all easier said than done. So they were 8 points clear, and then things started kind of to unravel. But maybe that was just because Donegal had them, had their number by then, maybe.
Yeah, and this goes back to the point I was making about the kind of the soccer analogy about the length of time and the amount of analysis that's being done. The camera flicked to Bonner on the sideline. I could see him. He was talking to Carl Lacey, and they were obviously in deep conversation about what was actually going on. And I remarked to, I remember saying to my brother yesterday, when after about 15, 20 minutes, the camera flicked to Horan, and he was very, very calm on the sideline. So there's a belief with these fellas that, listen, as long as it doesn't get too much out of hand, we can turn things around when you're a quality team. And when you have someone like Murphy in your setup, you know, you have the guy who can unlock all those doors for you. So what I think they did, and listen, I'm no obviously expert in this, but I think what they did, when they brought McGee on, first of all, he shored it down. He shored Newman up, right? It's because he brought guys back. Leo McLoone dropped in front of him, and they just said, OK, that long ball in is now no longer an option. But what Meade should have realised then was, OK, that Mickey Newman is no longer an option, but long ball into the other two guys could be options. But instead they ran it. And what happened was Donegal then tagged all the runners, and Meade ran into an awful lot of dark alleys. You know, so James McEntee a number of times got turned over. Cillian O'Sullivan ran a number of times, turned over. And those turnovers, every single one of those turns practically, were punished at far end. Mm. So you're then facing a kick out. Donegal squeezed the kick out, and you're really struggling to get the ball out. Whereas in the first 15, 20 minutes, all of that was very slick hands. You know, I run into space, give it to you at angles. It was all very one touch, and they were getting great reward from that. And they were also mixing it with long ball into Newman. When that kind of tactic was taken away from them by Donegal, they should have been able to say, OK, well, we'll pull Newman out and actually bring him out the field, drag the two lads, bring McGee out and actually create space in behind for, say, Tomas O'Reilly or one of the other lads. That's something I think they'll learn, and I think they'll be able to adapt, because they felt a little bit of a kind of, not a one-trick pony, because they had the long ball into Newman on the running game, but it felt like very much that they kind of had two tactics for going forward when probably you need 3 to 4. But they learn from it. You know, it's a brilliant game from them. And that high press, high energy game, it's really difficult to do that in Croke Park, because Croke Park is just so big. I mean, it is just so big. There is so much space. And I know people say, well, how is there that much space relative to other teams or other pitches? But there just is. You know, it's just the makeup of the pitch.
I assume the feeling of the hill as well, when it's empty, that just makes it seem even dimensionally bigger again.
Correct. You know, and if a goalkeeper kicks a little short kick out and you're trying to press it, it just feels like a guy gets a ball in so much, like he literally has, so he can go back to the goalkeeper. It just feels like it's a very big area, you know. So if you are playing that game, as I say, you need to be able to bring on five guys who are able to do that press very, very hard, you know, at high intensity. And as I said in the tweets, I just felt that there was a couple of points. McMahon will, you'll see, if anyone watches the game, McMahon is coming through. He has Brian Menton on his right-hand shoulder. All he should do is slip him the pass and Menton has a goal. And then, you know, after that, obviously the Newman one, you know, he probably should make himself aware of where the small square is and just step back out to come back in. But listen, Mead people will be happy. I think it's been 8 really good games for them. And it's been a great league campaign for them. And Andy will be happy. When he sits back and reflects, he'll go, OK, very good. We need to layer on that now. Layer over the next number of weeks and get ready for the championship. I think Donegal, you mentioned Connacht. I think Ulster is going to be seriously difficult this year to get out of. Down are going improving. Derry are improving. You know, so you're even just saying the lesser lights for Manor are still going to be there.
Causing trouble for somebody, always.
Trouble.
Yeah.
And then you've got Monaghan, Donegal, you know, you've got Tyrone. Armagh. And Armagh are improving big time. Yeah. So it's really, that's you know, I think there's going to be a couple of real big shocks up there.
It's funny, actually, you mentioned Tyrone as well. I always think, when I think of Tyrone, I think of that really warm summer's evening down in Park Talton last summer against Meath. Yeah. And you're just thinking, like, that was a really harsh lesson for Meath to learn, but it might have stood to them, that experience, like that they had Tyrone on the jugular, and, OK, refereeing decision aside, when perhaps that free at the end should have been free, it wasn't given, it might have levelled it up. I think Tyrone would have won it anyway, eventually.
Yeah.
But I just feel that the hurt from that and the lessons they took from it, I feel that they kind of grew up a lot after that.
Yeah, they probably did. I still don't think that night, if you know, when we were watching it, I still felt that at certain times, again, they were Tyrone had their number sometimes from Tyrone's defence point of view, that they kind of said, well, we know which guys they're going to try to get the ball to and punch holes. Now, Meath have added to it this year, and they've added a little bit of physicality in the full forward line. I just think a lot of teams now are giving you different looks. So what they'll do is they'll say, right, here's our setup. If you work that out, we're going to switch to a completely different setup. And if you get that one, we're going to either switch back or go to it. So there's nearly two to three. There's definitely two looks, but there's nearly three to four different looks, which is a big man inside, a big man maybe out at 11, or more of a running game, lots of space, lots of guys behind the ball, and we break, whatever it is. But that only comes from having a team and having a seasoned team, and you're able to layer it. Like, I mean, people look at Mayo and Kerry. Like, that Mayo team, regardless of the new guys in, there's a serious amount of, you know, experience in that team, and these guys just go, well, we know how to play this.
Yeah.
And Horan has had them. So he's like, okay, guys, we go back to what we know, we go back to the same calls, we go back to whatever it is, we're able to change it up. So, but Meade alone.
Like, the bench actually was used really well yesterday as well by Horan. It was just he fired them off exactly at the right time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like Andy Moran in particular, when he came out, obviously that's the impact sub, the big roar. But Colin Boyle, was like, imagine having Colin Boyle to come on as your sub.
Yeah, absolutely. And chomping at the bit to get in. No, it is. It's like, I mean, to flip it and look at Donegal, not that I was worried about Donegal at the start of the year. They've had their, obviously, you know, kind of troubles up there, you know, from an emotional perspective early on in the year and everything else that they had to get over. They had a number of guys like Owen Bond, Gallagher coming back, who was just immense on Saturday. Like, that guy is just, I think he's a fantastic player. I had him in my team last year.
Who did you throw him out for?
Well, he was injured now, to be fair.
Okay.
Yeah, so we give me a chance there. But I tell you, if he keeps going the way he can go, like, he's a guy who could be all-star recognition.
He's Owen Bond Gallagher. Yeah. That's inspiration now for you to get back to your best. You could be in Anthony Moyle's top 10.
Just keep your, you know, keep playing your cards right.
Speaking of Donegal, though, like, they did really, really well the weekend, and we still have Paddy McBurty and a few others to come back.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I've heard some people saying, oh, well, the experience. Then it was kind of going, well, really, did they have that much experience on the field? And then I kind of actually started to think about it. It was like, yeah, because there's some guys who are still relatively young, but they've been there for donkey's years. Like, McGrath has been there a long time now, you know, and he's been doing his cornerback stuff for a long time. And then obviously you have McGee, you have Murphy, you have McFadden. And if they get McBurty back and get him back even 85 to 90%, but to be fair, They've got a couple of fines up there. Young, what's his name? Gallan.
Gallan, yeah.
Mike, like, that guy is playing now. Four scores from play at 18 years of age in Crow Park in your first final.
Four against Kildare last week, Tommy's, after whispering into my ear there.
But what I liked about him was he had a few misses at the start, and he was being really, really well defended, and he was under a bit of pressure, and he never once dropped ahead. Like, I mean, after that, in your final, especially when you see the fullback being whipped so early, like after 13, 14 minutes, he got pulled out, you know, and I've been there before. The fullback is always the first to go when there's a general malaise, because you're just getting clean. Balls are just coming in. And they were. Like, they were being put on a plate for Mickey Newman. And it's always typical. You get taken off and then things start tightening up out around the middle. But he never, ever lost focus. And he just said no. And he never lost confidence. And some of the scores he kicked were really, really top drawer. It was a great game to watch, I have to say.
Yeah.
The Derry game was a great game to watch. The standard of football over the weekend was excellent. And, you know, people have bemoaned football about the rule changes have been brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, now it's still hard to get it sometimes with the mark. You still see guys making a mark and lads are tackling them, and even the guy is catching it. Even Murphy a couple of times, you know, young Cormac McGill was tackling him, and the referee is like, no, it's a mark. But that offensive mark is brilliant. It really is. It's a massive addition to the game, I think.
Did it go far enough?
Well, the funny thing about it is, like, what I find tricky with it is, it's like you're learning a new skill in your job, right? Mm-hmm. And you learn it, and you get it down, and then someone comes over and says, by the way, you don't need that now anymore. Well, you know, because this is what happens.
Yeah.
You know, so you're, as a defender, over the last number of years, you have learned, when you drop in, say as a half forward, you learn to mark space. You're zonal marking. Everyone else is picked up. I'm in a zone. So even if the ball comes in and is caught by you at corner forward, I just make sure I go over and double up. So I don't necessarily need to get to you as the ball is coming. I just need to be there as you get it. But now you need to get there before a ball gets you, because or else you mark it and you just have a shot. So you can still see the body language of some, especially half forwards coming back or midfielders, is that as the ball is in the air, they're thinking, okay, I'm just going to be there to press the guy when he catches it. And then he catches it and it's a mark and they're like, oh yeah, forgot that.
Yeah, you know, it's, and he sticks funny because you have to think that quickly as well.
Correct.
And I've seen in a few games actually this summer that marks people could have had and they didn't take them for whatever reason, or they were missed, or you were wondering, was that a mark, was it not?
It's very difficult. These guys are only down there, you know, amateur players. They're not there every single day walking through this. So you can imagine a manager has to get his fitness levels up, his S&C levels up. He has to do a bit of tactical work. He has to do this. And then he has to layer in rule changes, which really is kind of walkthrough stuff. But you have to do it in games. You may even miss it yourself. If you have a lad refereeing the game, he might miss it if you're playing, you know, in-house games. And then players might miss it. And you're right, there is that little bit of confusion. And then, of course, when the oxygen starts to, you know, dissipate, going to the brain, anything can happen.
Yeah,
you know,
you get tired.
Yeah, so it's. You asked, did it go far enough? I think with all of these changes, it's now very difficult. Players now have to, you know, just relate and go back to what they knew prior to this. So, you know, you're either putting it in or you're not putting it in. It's the kind of the way I would look at it. And let teams then say, OK, this is going to be in. I'm going to really practice
it. Now, the thing is as well, when you think about these marks and all these rule changes, there's a man in between the sticks who has to really keep an eye on everything, you know, because the goalkeepers are constantly strategising. They're doing all that. And then these rule changes. And one goalkeeper in particular is Rob Henley. The Croke Park redemption came yesterday for that man.
Yeah. I have to say he has a serious amount of resolve. He really does as a player. He must do, you know, because he's you know, I've watched him and even he loves. I think he loves being a goalkeeper. First of all, you know, he really enjoys the aspect of it. He's really into it. Like, he's a guy who I'd say just practices and is constantly looking for different things when he's away from even just normal training. But his resolve over the last number of years has been savagely high, because we spoke about the hurt that has gone with Mayo fans. Well, you know, a lot of that, the ire, shall we say, from Mayo people would have been pointed at him.
Black cards in the All-Ireland final, that was a horrible moment.
It was a horrible moment for him. And it's, you know, it's a moment that can really play on your mind and can play on your career. And it's very easy just to say, I'm done here. I don't need this in my, you know, be it my personal life. Like, we, you know, from the outside looking in, we'd all say, oh, geez, that Mayo people, great. I'm sure they're all great fans. But I'm sure there's a certain element who just absolutely destroyed him, you know, which happens in most counties. You know, people are going to have a go, be it for the right reasons or the wrong reasons. So I'd say there was a plenty of dark days for him, but he's you know, he's come back at it, and brilliant to see. Yeah, delighted for him.
That's 2013 as well. It's funny when you say there, most counties, you know, fans are great, but every once in a while they'll have a go. When that ever happened to you, did that play in your mind when you went to bed that night?
I used to get that so regularly, it didn't really bother me. The opposite, actually, if anyone actually said, well done, you played really, I was like, whoa, hold on.
You were suspicious?
So, yeah, something going on here.
Really?
Yeah, something going on here.
And like,
this
when
isn't
you say,
good.
All jokes aside, when you say it happened so regularly, do you think, was it worse for you? Was it worse in Meath? Or do you think has it changed over the years? I really think it's got more vitriolic over the years.
No, there were certain guys I used to think, certain journalists who I thought had maybe a bit of a hex, you know, if I thought I was an 8. See, back then we only had the rankings in the paper. We didn't have this kind of analysis. We were like, oh, 6 again.
Right, are you telling me now that every GA manager and every player says we pay no attention to this, we don't listen to papers, we don't read the papers,
we don't listen
to the radio?
Oh, no, everyone reads them, yeah, you read
them. Do they? Do you think they're still doing it?
Absolutely.
Why did they say they don't then?
Because they don't want to feel that it's a major, you know, determining factor in anyone's.
But what if you said, I have read it, I don't agree with it, move on the bus?
That's what I think you should. Anyone I'd say, read the papers, who cares? That's only someone's opinion.
So that means they're all looking at your top 10, which means you've really hurt Owen Bond Gallagher this morning.
No, I said he should be in. He could be in,
but then you have to dump somebody. Actually, it's Conor McManus whose feelings you really hurt.
Well, it's Conor McManus, I'd say, yes. Well, and by the way, if truth be known, because of my tiredness, you actually really planted that seed in your head. So really, it's your fault.
All right, it's all my fault. Conor McManus is not in his top 10. Right, I'm going to move on from that now. We're going to move on to another sport. On Saturday night, TG Cahir, I was actually working there. We broadcast Clash of the Titans at the National Stadium, where Kildare's Eric Donovan became the Irish featherweight champion. We talk about people having hard luck stories and long journeys. Eric's story was a long one, and he finally got his redemption on Saturday night.
Eric Donovan, congratulations on the stoppage win today. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. It's a great achievement for me. It's a proud moment for me and my family, and happy with the performance as well. Nice to get a knockout finish as well with the body shot. What can I say? It's brilliant night for me overall, and fans and live TV and everything. It's amazing.
I mean, you came out tonight and you were steely-eyed from the off. I don't think I've ever seen you so focused in any of the interactions we've had in the lead-up to the fight. How important was it that you got the win tonight for your career to advance now?
It was so important. Like, there was a lot at stake, because I feel like I've got a lot of chances. I feel like I've got a second chance, you know, but this was like the big kind of finale of my second chance. You know, is he good enough? Let's give him the platform. We give him the live TV. We give him the main event. Irish title. Non-defeated boxer in front of him, who is a bit of a puncher, you know. He's been training with two competent coaches, Kenny Deegan and Joe Clifford, for the last 12 weeks. He should be ready. You know, there's a lot of things, like a lot of kind of expectations of myself. So I wanted to deliver. I knew going out here tonight that I didn't want to just get in and just have a dull kind of a shutout points win or something. I really wanted to shine. Feel like I did, but I also feel like there's more left in me. I'm just going to keep going, Simon. I just want to keep going. I'm enjoying boxing and loving it, and the spark is there, and you know, I want to become the best that I can, and I think there's more in the tank. I definitely do. I think there's more left for me to achieve, and I think I can become a European champion. I believe I can become a European champion, and who knows after that. The only limitations we have are the ones we put on ourselves, like, you know what I mean. If there's anything comes after that, would be a bonus.
I was just describing there to Anthony Mullis the atmosphere on Saturday night. It was amazing. People say, of course you'll say that she was working at it, but yeah. I think when you go into those events, I certainly didn't appreciate how alive the Irish boxing scene was until I began working with boxing on TG Cahir. It's just amazing. And just the fact the room, there was a lot of love in the room anyway for Eric Donovan. Yeah. I kind of felt nearly bad for poor Stephen McAfee, who's come up against him. And Stephen wasn't there to just show up. Like, he really wanted to contend, and he was well in contention for a long time, even though Eric was winning the rounds, but not by much until he got that left hook straight in. It was just...
Yeah.
And then Eric just got up, he went to the ropes, and he just roared. And you just see years of frustration and everything build up. Like, and I don't think we appreciate how hard boxers work sometimes.
Oh, it's phenomenal sport. It's like, obviously, from Andy Lee and chatting to him, and I used to kind of dabble in it a bit just to keep myself in some kind of shape. And it is, I don't know how they do it. It is absolutely ferocious that they're, you know, even to keep your hands up for 3 minutes for a layperson, you know, while someone's hitting you, or even just to hit a bag, and even just to stay in your feet for that period of time, and then to go, say, do it 8 or 10 times, as I say, with someone coming at you. It's like the levels of concentration and levels of fitness. Like, we spoke there about, you know, lack of oxygen going to the brain. Like, as soon as that happens in boxing, you're on the ground. You know, you're floored, you're out. So all of the stuff that has to take part is just, it's. I don't think, you know, people say, oh, well, you know, it's there's a bit of, it's a vicious sport or all this, but I actually think it's a masterful sport. It really is. Like, I mean, the ability, the levels of fitness, the levels of coaching, the levels of tactics actually in it are phenomenal. You know, really, that the way all of those things don't just come because, you know, a guy gets lucky with a punch. That's probably hours of analysis that a guy, you know, when he swings a right hand, he might keep himself a little bit exposed underneath his right elbow or whatever it is, and you got to get in. It's really, really good.
Yeah, it was really fascinating to watch, actually. There was a whole range of fights building up to that one as well. There was a great one as well beforehand, Victor Rabai. He's a Moldovan lad who was born in Moldova, grew up in Dublin, and he was the favourite, and he was in the ring, and he should have won it much, much handier, but he didn't, because he didn't have his game face on. And at one point he was smiling. I remember asking Andy Lee, why is he smiling? And Andy said, I think it's because he's thrown. He says, often when you see boxers smiling, it's because they don't know how to react, and they're hoping by smiling they're going to make the other lad react in a maladaptive way.
Okay.
He said it means he doesn't know what he wants to do yet, and he just about managed to get over the line, and he was firm favourite. Just goes to show how you can be thrown.
There you go.
More so than I think in any other individual sport, because, you know, one one iota out of kilter and then you're gone. Interesting.
Yeah.
Actually, loads of interesting stuff going on. We have another video now. Declan Lynch, he was talking on our paper review yesterday about Mick McCarthy.
It's quite evident, looking at it during the week, that Mick is just the perfect manager for the Republic of Ireland for life. He should be simply made manager for life. And going back to something we talked about earlier, good lads, great lads, right? Mick, his whole thing is the goodness of lads, right? He loves good lads, right? And he's quoted here saying,
Joe, you're a good lad. You're in.
You know, they're a good lad. I love coming away for every campaign because you know you're with a great bunch of lads and they will leave it all out in the pitch. You know,
Loves good lads again.
But you see, not only that, but he is able to identify goodness in them.
Good lads.
Yeah. And that is who he is. Right, and Ireland, the one thing that Irish players, now they're not going to, so they don't have to say the technical proficiency of the Balkan nations, shall
that's
we
true,
say,
yeah.
right?
But
many of those are not good lads.
No, that's true.
I would suggest some of them are bad lads. I would go so far as to suggest. While they may come on and you know do a little kind of flourish here and there,
yeah.
They will not give you what
good
the
lads will
give to Mick McCarthy, which is goodness.
Well, there you go now. That was a laugh a minute. I was actually listening to that in my ear yesterday up in Croke Park, having a giggle, thinking, there's Joe Malloy laughing, but kind of uncomfortable as well, which is always nice to see because it takes a lot to make Joe Malloy uncomfortable. Tom Malone, you're in here. Welcome. Guramila Margaret,
Hopefully I'm a good lad. That's all
you're,
you want.
You're
you
the
just
best.
Want to be a good lad. Yeah, let's start with football. Liverpool obviously top of the Premier League following their 2-1 win over Spurs yesterday. Was an element of luck in the winning goal with Toby Alderweireld turning the ball into his own net late on there after Hugo Lloris dropped Salah's header. But Liverpool top of the league after that 2-1 win. Neil Warnock was left fuming though following Cardiff's 2-1 loss to Chelsea. Cesar Azpilicueta's equaliser was offside, missed by officials, and Ruben Loftus-Cheek knocked the ball home. But once he had calmed down, Neil Warnock was asking for VAR in the Premier League.
If anybody was in doubt before today, I think VAR has got to be the answer, hasn't it, to help them out? Because they need help, don't they, really? VAR would have sorted the goal out within seconds. Wouldn't have took more than 10 seconds to sort out.
Yeah, that was once he'd calmed down. He was I thought he was going to combust on the sideline yesterday.
The old VAR really isn't working out for them, is it?
All that as well. Neil Warnock is probably one of the last people you'd expect to be calling for VAR as well. He's a little bit...
I think it's in the English Times maybe this morning. But I just saw a quick headline where basically a guy was saying that, you know, that the referees are getting an awful lot of pressure and an awful lot of vitriol put towards them, and the likes of Warnock going on like this, because I know he was very annoyed and I saw it, but he was like a child, like, I mean, yeah. After taking his toy away, like, he should have much more respect. Like, they're not doing it deliberately, like, they're getting mistakes wrong, they don't have the ability to watch video. So he should be able to say it, because there's idiots in the stand who would see this as, oh, listen, if he's doing it, I can do it.
Yeah, and the problem is when you come to a Saturday morning, you're at a kids game, you're at an under 14s game where kids refereeing these games, they're getting abused as well, because Warnock does
absolutely.
It. Like,
In
the Premier League this evening, Arsenal are looking to climb into third place. They host Newcastle at 8 o'clock. Newcastle, of course, without a Premier League win since mid-December. On to football, and the second highest attended game in Europe at the weekend. Care to guess what it was?
Hit me.
The Checkered Trade Trophy Final. 85,021 people turned up at Wembley for Portsmouth against Sunderland.
Wow.
Yeah,
what?
Yeah.
Why?
Maybe it's an effect with the Sunderland Till I Die documentary, but it piqued interest all around Europe, including Paris Saint-Germain midfielder Thomas Meunier, who tweeted his followers looking for a link to the game. So all that cash playing for Paris Saint-Germain, he can't afford a Sky Sports subscription.
I'm going to plead ignorance now. Who won?
There we go. It finished 1-1 in normal time, then 2-2 after extra time, and Portsmouth won 5-4 on penalties. Aidan McGeady actually got both goals for Sunderland.
So they got the value for the
thing.
Cash, so
they did. They did. All 85,021 of them. But yeah, second highest attended game all weekend.
One of the Portsmouth guys doesn't look too happy there. Whatever was going on.
No, whatever was going on there. Yeah, I think Tommy was saying Barcelona might have been the highest attended so far.
Yep, Barcelona.
That makes sense. Yeah. Portsmouth-Sunderland.
Portsmouth-Sunderland.
No offence. I don't quite understand. But look, their boat got floated. They had a good day out.
Yeah, exactly. But obviously that Netflix documentary as well, The Sunderland Till I Die.
I think that's probably piqued
interest in the club as well. So
I watched that over Christmas. It was just, I just think teams should always allow documentary cameras in. I mean, again, people say, I said, because I did a documentary a few years ago, a radio doc with
should always allow documentaries, particularly if
you let me in. But no, yeah. I did one with Davey Fitzgerald a few years ago in his last year as hurling manager in County Clare, and that was tough going as a documentary to do because it was top secret and kept trying to keep it quiet and under wraps. And it was, when you do a radio documentary, more so than telly, you're kind of doing it by yourself. I had a great producer, Sarah Blake, actually. She was in RTE with me. But it's tiring. But I just think, you know, when you hear so many managers saying people don't understand or players, and we mightn't always understand the work people put in, let people see it.
Yes. Yeah.
Let people see the trauma. Let them see the hard work.
I just think,
you know, there's no harm in letting people know how hard people are working.
Yeah,
especially
absolutely.
When things like, you know, aren't going your way, and when decisions aren't going your way, and, you know, players, like we saw Sunderland Till I Die, there were players there arriving who didn't really want to be there, they didn't carry it, and then there were other players trying to do everything.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
You just became a Sunderland supporter. It's brilliant. It's still on Netflix, I think.
It's available.
It's a really good watch. Yeah. You will end up loving Sunderland, and you will someday go to watch them. Like, they're on my list now.
Well, there you go, yeah. Look, worked for Thomas Meunier, although he's not willing to actually pay. He wanted a free streak.
Yeah.
obviously, Mayo fans waking up with that all 2-hour winning feeling this morning after their crowned league champions yesterday. They got the better of Kerry 3-11 to 2-10. In the hurling final, of course, Aaron Galland struck 1-9 for Limerick as they overcame Waterford 124 to 19 points. And Galway halted Kilkenny's charge for 4 in a row Camogie League titles yesterday after they got the better of them by 16 points to 2. You were obviously there.
Yeah, that was brilliant for two reasons. One, I'm from Galway. It's always good to hear Galway girl go out in Croke Park.
Yeah.
Which version?
They played three versions of it. Like, I have to say, Galway girl, much as I enjoy the tune when I'm in Galway, it can be quite dangerous outside of Galway. Because what happens is you're at a wedding or something, and you could be like somewhere like Coppers every once in a while, you know, and you end up being
every
the only
week.
I'm not Jane Stapleton, I don't have the gold card. But, like, you know, and you might be the only Galwegian within grabbing distance. You know what I mean?
And you go nuts.
And
but
then,
you get
no,
grabbed.
I don't go nuts.
Oh,
but
you get grabbed.
I'm a small person. Okay. People tend to be bigger than me. And then you're lifted up and you're thrown about the place and people are swinging you around.
Yeah.
And you end up kind of battered and bruised. Like, I remember coming home from one wedding with a bruise in the back of my leg after being thrown about by Galway girls. So we had two versions of them. We had the Ed Sheeran version. They played the Mundy version. And then they played Dolores Kane, Galway Bay.
Okay.
Which is not as dangerous in Coppers, I have to say.
No.
But
no.
Yeah.
That's just a cameo down.
Yeah, but all jokes aside, the Galway Camogie team have been doing really, really well because when you think they've had a huge problem with managerial consistency over the years. So last year,
there's never been a problem with talent. It's just kind of
a bit like Galway Hurling. There's probably never a problem with talent. There was just a problem maybe harnessing it together. So Galway Camogie, a bit like Galway Hurling, is underachieved, I think, over the years. So like they won the All-Ireland finally a few years ago, but it took a long, long time.
Yeah.
But they had huge problems with managers. So last year, as in when I say huge problems with managers, they might be there for one season and go. That you just didn't have the consistency. So last year, Cathal Murray came in after the league. So he only had them for championship last year. And they got to the All-Ireland semi-final, which Galway should be getting to. They should be getting to more finals, really. And then, but the difference is that while they managed to beat Kilkenny yesterday, Kilkenny were not firing all cylinders.
Mm.
You know, and that's the thing. So Galway need to enjoy it, but they need to realise as well they need to step it up. But the Camogie, it's an awful shame the way it's reffed. It's not their fault. They're following the rules.
Yeah.
But I just think the women want to be more physical. They're much better athletes now than they were back in the day, obviously, when Camogie rules are being laid out.
There is an issue with that. Why is that such an issue?
It's just the rules. It's just the way it is. And then I think it was brought up in Camogie Congress, I think, last year. I'm open to correction on this. It was brought up in Camogie Congress. It didn't go through on a technicality or something, so that means it had to be parked just by Congress rules, so they can't revisit it for another 2 years or something.
Wait, so what are you looking for it to change? What do you think would
the women
help?
Want it to be more like hurling.
Right.
So, like, the contact, nowhere near the amount of contact is allowed, those shoulders that we see in hurling, that kind of stuff. And the thing is, these women are athletes now, and they're in the gym, they're lifting weights, they won hard, they want to go hard at it. And the trouble is, if you get stuck in, you're going to get booked or penalised, or you're going to get freezing on the side. So it ends up reverting to this kind of defensive kind of game. And it's been noticed as well that maybe, and it makes sense, if you're being televised, if you're a referee, you want to be really careful. I think all refs go out.
Yeah, you're probably being analysed.
Refs want to go out, have the best game possible. And I think the best way a ref can have a game is not be noticed. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but it has been noticed by people who are much more camogie games than I am that as the summer goes on, their refereeing gets more, for the want of a better phrase, consistent.
Yes.
Because what happens is June and July, the ref will let things go because it turns into a good game of hurling. But then he or she is thinking, I'm on the Sunday game tonight.
Yes.
I might get pulled.
Much more
or rightfully so, if Cork or Kenny are playing in the final and the ref doesn't blow something, then they, you know, the likes of Paddy Murray or somebody can turn around and say, you didn't blow that, that was a free. So it's an issue, and it's a shame because it is ruining what potentially, like Cork and Kilkenny, I mean, when they go at each other in camogie, it's the best game you'll see all afternoon.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'll get off my camogie rant.
Right, okay, let's move on to golf. And Graham McDowell, he's won his first tournament on the PGA Tour since 2015. The Northern Irishman shot a final round 69 to grind out a one-stroke 18-under par victory at the Corrales Championship in the Dominican Republic. Greystone golfer Paul Dunn finished with a 71 for a share of 12th on 12-under par. And here's G-Mac talking afterwards.
It's been a long grind. It's March Madness. I was kind of mad out there this afternoon, but you know, it's been a lot of hard work, a lot of grinding. This is a very sweet victory. I'm going to enjoy this one, and hopefully we can use it as a springboard to get back to where I need to be in this game.
Yeah, the coverage wasn't the best of the old Corrales Championship. I think he actually had to post a video himself just on his phone and then put it on the PGA Tour. Anyway, the PGA Tour proper, Kevin Kisner beat Matt Kuchar 3-2 in the final round of the WGC Dell match play last night. Kisner started the day by getting the better of Francesco Molinari in the semi-final before overcoming compatriot Kuchar. I mean, this tournament looked like it was going to be brilliant at the start of the weekend. We lined up with Rory and Tiger first thing on Saturday morning. That potentially was going to run into a clash with Henrik Stenson. Then Beauregard knocked out Stenson, and then he knocked out Tiger Woods as well. We ended up with a pretty flat final four, and it petered out. But there was a little bit of controversy earlier on the week between Sergio Garcia and Matt Kuchar. And I don't think Matt Kuchar is going to win any popularity contests anytime soon anyway, because he had that issue in Mexico where he shorted the caddy at the start of the season. But on the par three, Sergio had a tiny putt that he actually didn't get left, and then he missed it, and it just ended up this kind of hoo-ha between the pair of them, where then Sergio Garcia was saying to Matt Kuchar afterwards, oh, you should concede me one sort of for that. And the game ended in a bizarre way. But anyway, Matt Kuchar was beaten in the final by Kevin Kisner, and I don't think anyone was all that sad to see Matt Kuchar get turned over. But in racing, Grand National week this week, but the flat is back as well. It was a huge weekend for Godolphin. In Maidan, they won the Dubai World Cup with Thunder Snow and the Grade 1 Alcaraz Sprint and the traditional flat curtain race as well, the Lincoln Handicap as well. They won that with Ozair. So, but more about the Grand National surely later on in the week.
Absolutely.
A Tiger Roll, of course, looking to make history and go back to back for the first horse since Red Rum.
Okay, now it's time to move on. We have rugby coming up next, but first of all, we do have this video here of Andy Dunn, and he is talking about who else. It's the talking point of the weekend, Jacob Stockdale's error.
I heard a snippet of Dan McFarland, you know, adamant that it wasn't all down to Stockdale knocking on over the line or John Cooney's kick. But it probably was, actually. And
literally, of course, he's right. It's not all down to those two moments. But in terms of how these games ebb and flow, it's
well,
hard to look past them.
The Stockdale, I mean, he's just so electric. He's just like box office.
He was outrageously good when he had the ball yesterday.
Yeah, he was incredible. I think maybe his best performance I've seen. And the way, like, he dismissed four Leinster defenders with ease. He was running at serious pace, but Nigel Carlin was his coach at Irish under 20s level, and he was kind of on the record in an interview saying he used to give everybody a heart attack as a coach because he's got this star quality, but you've also got your heart in your mouth watching him. I remember in the All Blacks game back in November, he got blocked down about 5 minutes before he got the wonder try. And so he had the balls and the confidence to another chip kick, you know, 5 minutes later against New Zealand. So he's not very Irish, you know what I mean? He's just got such explosive ability and talent. Genetically, he doesn't look like a typical Irish winger, the height and the speed.
Yeah.
I wonder, was that a disadvantage for him? He's so, I suppose, so tall to get down onto the floor as quick as he needs to get down. I mean, he was well in the dead ball area before he started to approach the floor. And that was a 14-point swing, though, in that match.
Yeah, one of the bigger swings that you probably wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of. Delighted that Alan Quillen has come in to join us. Imagine what?
Good morning.
That's all. You see, I love the way, the only way to scare a former rugby player is to throw some Irish at them.
I was just saying to the lads, if you start out what you did to Rog a few weeks ago, he could converse with you and talk with you.
See, Rog is one of those people full of surprises.
Yeah.
Like, I think you could start with Mandarin with him and he'd find something to throw back at
you. He might speak French with you the next day.
Well, my French wouldn't be as good as his now. It wouldn't at all. Anyway, we're here. First of all, Jacob Stockdale really is the talking point of the weekend. I feel very sorry for him.
Yeah, it's tough when that happens in sport. I think for he'd all the hard work done, you know, he was it was a sensational break, and he's done it before. Unfortunately, he kind of goes right over the line and doesn't dive, and people can analyse that and stuff. And it's just one of those things that you've got to be really sure in those tight games about dotting the ball down and stuff. So it's very difficult. I think we all feel sorry for him. He was superb on Saturday, as were Ulster. And you think that would have stretched their lead out. Would Leinster come back from that? They have the credentials and the mindset and the mentality for sure. But it would have put Ulster in a great position. And, you know, he's tweeted about it or put a message on Instagram and stuff, and he feels devastated after the game. And unfortunately, that was the talking point, really.
Any reason why he's doing it, Alan? Like, is he looking to kind of get in?
Yeah, probably he's looking to go around under the post. Maybe I'm not sure what his mentality is. I think he's done that in the under-20s before, and a lot of his tries he goes right in around, you know. So I suppose, look, it's easy to analyse it and see what's wrong within the action. But I think when you have a sniff of a line like that, there you've got to dive. And. And when I scored the very few tries that I did score in my career, I did, if I was completely clear, I dotted them down as I was kind of on the run. But if there's any sort of contact or people around there, you can see the picture there. Mm. It's heartbreaking when you come off a field and it's about you, and you feel, and he probably exasperates that in his own mind. So it was very disappointing for him and for Ulster, and I certainly feel sorry for him. But he has to learn, and that's the ruthless nature of sport. He just has to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Yeah, like, I am aware of just doing some like research in my other life, whatever, that sometimes rugby players, or in any sport, but especially rugby, there's kind of, your mind kind of holds you back from kind of throwing your body down for some reason, even though they've no problem going into tackles and stuff.
Yeah.
That sometimes there's a psychological thing that just goes against you of throwing your body down onto a line. I just remember reading, I can't remember the top of my head, like an academic paper about how some players in Australia had an issue with this, for example, that it was just, they felt this mental block that for some reason they just didn't feel safe, you know, just kind of to leap into the air and throw themselves down. Would you be aware of that?
Yes, rugby league players seem to do it more, where they dive all the time. Because I don't know, is it a fear that, because there's a lot of slapping the hands in rugby league and stuff like that, and there's a real focus on getting into passing channels and going after the ball, if you like, whereas rugby union is more technique in some of the tackles, and people are trying to, for sure they're trying to tag the ball, but it's just different. I would have always preferred to run over the line and kind of dot it down on the run. But if there's any, there's certain games, and you've got to realise you're not in open space, and if there's any threat anywhere around. But look, it's just freakish. Sometimes you can't explain why these things happen. 9 times out of 10, he just touches that down as normal, as he does a lot. And it's a try, and it's a significant score, and it gives him a bit of breathing space. And it just didn't happen, so he's just got to be more careful with that and dive on some occasions. But that's that anticipation when you're in that situation yourself. And unfortunately, it's something that's going to be highlighted and regretful, but they can't change it now. He can just make sure in the future that he dives in those situations.
I thought Dan McFarland dealt with it very well, because he was obviously getting a barrage of questions afterwards about the incident, and Dan was making very sure that he wasn't going to hang out one of his players.
Yeah, he's got to protect him, I think, and he's
absolutely
a young player, and he's achieved so much in his career so far and scoring all those tries last year in the Six Nations and being involved with Ireland and, you know, the try against the All Blacks and stuff. And so, look, he has to protect him, and I thought that was the right thing to do. And It's just unfortunate that there's a lot of focus on this, and it has to be spoken about. Coaches who coach young kids will obviously, that they'll see that and say, look what can happen at the top level, and you've got to make sure. But unfortunately, it does happen. We've seen a fair few of them over the years where people lose the ball when they're over celebrating or something like that. I think there was a slight smile coming on his face where he thought he was already over the line in the head, maybe.
Yeah. So it's a hard lesson to learn.
It is, yeah.
Dan Levy, that's a big loss for Ireland as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, because I think personally for the player, it's a massive blow, and it was a significant knee injury. I think the replays didn't show the injury again, because I think it didn't look good. It's so unfortunate for him, you know, given the year he had last year and the success he had. And unfortunately, it's just the nature of the game, Anthony. And some guys, there was times in my own career where I thought, why again, you know. Tommy O'Donnell and Munster at the moment just can't buy a bit of luck the last 3 or 4 years with injuries, and it happened. Some players, Sean O'Brien has had an incredible bad run. Keane Healy at one stage, you know, was about 2 or 3 years there of just constant injuries and stuff like that, and he's come back and had an incredibly good run. And you hope when you come back from an injury that this is it for a while, you know, but unfortunately then you're kind of, it's like using up 9 lives, isn't it?
You kind of
keep going, and oh Jesus, there are more to come. And he's still very young, Dan Levy, and he hasn't had a huge injury profile throughout his career so far, but you know, he's had that disruption of the hamstring since before Christmas, and to come back now and to be having to be patient to work his way back, and just to get a serious injury like that, it's the worst part of sport.
Is it a positional thing? Because you mentioned O'Brien, O'Donnell, Levy. Like, you know, you have a lot of fellas in that kind of 6, 7, 8 row seem to be nearly, you know, well, is it just a nature because they're going into contact?
Yeah. No, I tell you, if you look at it, it's just the nature of having so many involvements in a game that, you know, wingers are probably not going to be involved in the tackle area as much as back rowers, or props maybe not.
Yeah.
Back rows are tracking all over the field, they're involved in so many things. I think if you add up their moments in the game, they're much higher than anybody else, because it's that position in right in the middle, 6, 7, 8, is just involved in so much. Carries, tackles, breakdowns. And I suppose if you're involved so many times, you're going to increase the risk of something going wrong. But look, some of the injuries and I'm not sure what it's like in the other sports, but some of the injuries are freakish ones. They're just, geez, if you were 1 second later or half a second or one step forward, or if this guy didn't fall on your leg. And it's just the nature of rugby. Unfortunately, he got his leg caught and damaged his knee. And it's hard, psychologically, it's hard for players. So you talk about Jacob Stockdale, you know, he'll dust himself down and come back.
His body is still...
I'd rather be Jacob Stockdale this morning than Dan Levy, to be honest.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point, Ash. When you mention other sports and freak injuries and stuff, and half a second later or earlier, I always think of Tom Parsons last summer. He's still not back to full form, and that must be very, very difficult.
It can happen to anyone, you know, and I've been on the operating table. I sat in the dressing room in Stockport in 2005, the start of the European season, and I thought my career is over. Mark Taylor tackled me by around the collar as I was kind of going to the side of him, put all his weight in my knees, studs got trapped on the ground, and my knee snapped inwards. You could hear it, and I knew straight away my knee is in bits here, and I said, that's career ending, you know. And we didn't have a huge amount of medical people with us. The doctor looked after me, but he had to get back out onto the field. There was 2 doctors with us, but they had to be there. So I'm sitting in the dressing room for a while thinking, Jesus, where am I going here? And it's the toughest part of sport, I think. Winning and losing and the ups and downs of the other stuff, getting picked and dropped and all that kind of stuff. Everybody's going to experience that. You want to try and avoid those serious injuries. You know, we'll all pick up injuries, but it's the serious ones that can really have an effect, and it can stop your flow and momentum. And Tom Parsons, you know, that's a significant one, and it's psychologically it can break you, because if you have such a long period, if you can see, well, look, it's going to be 6 months, you know, it goes, even though it's a long time, but if you're going to the 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 months, 12 month scenario, it's really, really tough. And it's not just the injury when you come back, it's the rest of the body. How do you keep that condition? That's
so you're trying to stay fit, as well as fit as you can.
It's keeping the other muscles alive, you know what I mean? When I had my knee injury, I was in the gym probably 5-6 days after the operation. I thought our rehab specialist at the time, Brian Green, was crazy, but he was trying to make sure the other muscles stayed alive, and the hammers and the calves and the glutes and the core. So we were doing other stuff. And that's modern sports science, where it's not just the actual injury, it's the other parts of the body. And we've seen so many sports people come back from knee injuries and then they pull a hammer in the left leg, or their back gives them trouble, or, you know, it's
And you damaged your shoulder as well in 2003, isn't that right?
Yeah, that was 2003. That was another big injury. And that's, look, it's there was two big ones there that kind of hampered my career at times, you know. And so for Dan Levy, it's just trying to get him to work. Yeah. He's got to be patient now.
What age is he?
He's 23. He's still young.
Yeah.
Sean O'Brien is, like, people have seen the injuries there over the years. When he comes back for two
25
games,
25 in
one
May,
game.
Tommy's after telling me there in my ear, Dan Levy.
25 is Dan, 25 in May. Okay, yeah. Well, he was
still very young.
I can't remember the age of all these fellas, but he's around a number of years and been very, very impressive, but still very young.
Yeah, and it's something actually as well, I think, that like I've actually been learning day to day now as well, that doctors need to be cognizant of. You can't just go in, say, geez, Quinny, that knee, you'd be 6 months and rock out of the room. You need to give that athlete support as well.
Yeah, but to be fair, he'll get great support and there's a great setup. I feel sorry for people in amateur sport who don't have, and I've seen my own friends in my rugby club in Tipperary are getting injuries and serious injuries, and it's hard to get you can't put a team around them to help them. They've got to try and work.
You mean the magic bottle of water doesn't work?
Magic sponge, yeah, when you go away.
But if they're doing that module next semester.
For any clubs, amateur GA players around here, you know, the country, if they get an injury on a Sunday and they've got to try and, they're thinking first of all, they're thinking work. Mm. What's the boss going to say? And I'm out for a week. When am I getting the operation? And then you're talking about physio and having the time to rehab and all that. So it's very difficult. Dan Levy will get a lot of good support. And it's tough on him, very, very tough. And it's just the nature of sport, unfortunately. Sometimes you can't explain him.
And that's the nature of sport as well. Leinster do march on. Despite that, they squeaked through. They were missing key players, but it's an interesting few weeks ahead for them.
Yeah, it is. And look, Ulster, we shouldn't take anything away from Ulster's performance on Saturday. They were absolutely superb. I didn't see it coming. Not many people saw it coming. I thought an average Leinster performance still had them winning by 7 or 8 points and never looking like they were going to lose it. I thought Ulster would definitely bring a load of passion and energy and stuff, but it was their accuracy and the plan and the structure that they had that was most impressive. And they certainly sent out a message that, you know, we're ready to come back to the top table and kind of dine there again. And it's great to see. And a lot of young players stepping up and performing really well, and it was just brilliant. Now, you could argue and say, when you break it down, and I'm sure Leo Cullen will say, there was certain parts and mistakes they made, the block down, the hesitancy there from Ringrose for that try, and 7 points in tight games like that, it's a big squeeze and it's a big psychological boost. So Ulster and Leinster came back and scored, but they went again, and they felt there was a confidence and a self-belief there that they haven't seen in a number of years in that Ulster side. And they kept going and going. And unfortunately, you know, John Cooney missing the conversion as well could have been really, really significant. And then it's just that habit of winning. I was talking about Mayo on breakfast this morning and the psychological boost you can get from just getting over the line and the relief of that kind of stuff. And then when you win stuff, you have that kind of muscle memory, whether it's brain memory, to say, even on the bad day, we can still just manoeuvre our way into position to go, hold on a minute, no panic here. And Leinster kind of showed that no panic scenario in the second half, where they just slowed the game down a little bit. Ross Byrne's penalty was phenomenal. And they just struck with that try from Adam Byrne as well. And they just were able to see the game out with good control. Yeah, and to be fair to him, he's cramping up, and to kick that penalty was incredible character and mental strength from Ross Byrne. You know, he's kind of living in the shadow of Johnny Sexton.
After that, to kick.
Yeah, he has a chat with Reese Ruddock, and that's exactly what you want from your kicker, to say, no, my mind is right, I want this. And he backed himself and ultimately won the game for Leinster. They got the good fortune of Toulouse beating Racing yesterday and to have a home semi-final in Dublin. It's massive. You know, trying to piece people together and preparation and familiar surroundings, it'll be a full house again in the Aviva, and all your home fans there. It's huge for Leinster. Toulouse were in Dublin in January, and they got walloped by Leinster team that were missing a lot of players that day. So that'll be in the back of their mind. They will pose a very serious threat. There's no doubt about it. And they showed a lot of character themselves to win with 14 men yesterday against Racing. But you got to think now it's Leinster's to. I think they'll be in another final.
Yeah. Now, obviously, Munster would have something to say about that. They were in Edinburgh, and you were there.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't the best performance, and they were. They didn't have a lot of possession. They made some mistakes. The big positive for them was their defence and the work rate and the endeavour they showed. And it doesn't always win you games, but it certainly made sure that they were in with a chance of getting a late score and turning the game. There were 13 points to 10 down in the second half. They had a Edinburgh had a penalty and it was reversed. Pierce Schumann hit Tadhg Byrne. It was minimal enough contact, but it was a penalty. People were giving out that Tadhg Byrne kind of milked it a little bit.
Do you think he did?
Maybe a little bit. I thought initially that it was a serious injury because he stayed down. And I thought, Jesus, the last thing they need now is Tadhg Byrne going off when they're going to be 16-10 down.
Yeah.
And then suddenly we started seeing replays and stuff and seeing the contact and see what happened. He kind of flew out of the back line. But it was a penalty and, you know, it's Edinburgh, Richard Cockerell will be fuming. He was fuming after the game. The Pierce Schumann had a brilliant game, the South African loosehead. But Munster kick up field and they end up scoring. Keith Earls, he was phenomenal. And I think the way he's played in the last few years has been unbelievable. The anticipation to take the quick penalty and strike early on and then score in the end. Munster could have been 14 points down in the first 15 or 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly they go up the field and they're 7 points up. It's a huge swing. It's massive. And they hadn't played any rugby, Anthony, you know. Yeah. And look, we've heard this so many times. Munster never beaten, never write them off, all that kind of stuff. And we used to hear it as players. And it's kind of like that muscle memory we're talking about. And that
breeze feeds in.
It can kind of go into the group. And even though, you know, this group are trying to create their own legacy, they've been in the last two semi-finals and come up short.
Very short.
Will they come up short this time? Most probably. They're on the back foot. Everyone will write them off.
But that's a great position.
And that's when they'll possibly be dangerous.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's just when you look at the Saracens team and the ability and the strength and depth that they have and the squad, the power, it's going to be very difficult. But they're in with a shot, so they're in kind of bonus territory.
Yeah.
You know, when you lose a match, if they lost the game on Saturday against Edinburgh, which on paper you're thinking, even though Edinburgh have been very good, Munster should be, if they want to have aspirations to close the gap in Leinster and win European Cups, you've got to be going to Edinburgh winning. And I mean that respectfully. If they'd lost that game Saturday, which they most probably should have on the balance of play, well, that would have been devastating. That would have been a really, really negative situation for them. They're in a place now where people expect Saracens to win. Can they produce a performance and rock them? Well, they're capable of upsetting them a little bit, but ultimately it'll come down to that bit of quality and who delivers on the day. So you want the old simple scenario of Saracens having an off day and Munster having a really incredible day, 8, 9, some 10 performances out of 10 for them
which
throughout
they're capable
their team.
Of doing.
They are. And look, but I think when you underperform, you know that you can do a lot better. They can do a lot better with control and how they hold on to the ball and where they attack. And maybe it'll give them a little bit of freedom to have a real go. Because if they try and contain Saracens, which they did 2 years ago with kicking the ball up in the air, and they tried to contain them, that won't work. They've got to play and try and create something and hope a bit of spark comes somewhere. And you can see what happens in the way momentum changes in sport. If the underdog suddenly starts getting a score or two, or they get an intercept try, or a ball goes loose or something. So strange things can happen in sport, and they've got to believe and they've got to work their socks off now in the next couple of weeks to be ready for that. But I think Saracens are the team to beat In the last four. I've said it before, the quarter-final, they just have so much
strength. You've been banging that drum for a while, actually.
But
and with reason.
You take Owen Farrell out of a Saracens team and you think, oh, a little bit of vulnerability, but then you start rattling off the other names like Mako Vunipolo is injured at the moment, but then you go Billy Vunipolo, Maro Toje, Skelton, the second row, Jamie George, the forwards are just so powerful. So Munster will be pleased, though. You know, there was this great sense of relief after the game, and they kind of stole it at the end.
When you're looking at a player like Keith Earls, and I use him as an example as a spectator, and you're watching him and you're thinking, there'll be some kind of magic coming here today, you never know what he's going to do. And I know athletes will always say, we don't prepare for what other teams can do, we'll only prepare for what we can do ourselves. But if you're going out to face Munster and you're thinking, they have that Keith Earls lad there and we don't know what he's going to do, how do you prepare to try and nullify that kind of person who has that special X-factor?
You try and keep the ball away from him in rugby.
Is it that simple?
Well, it's not that simple. You know, if you kick loosely to someone like Keith Earls or Jordan Larmour or Darcy Graham, who played for Edinburgh on Saturday, incredibly great footwork, and someone who just, if you give him space, they're that natural talent, Anthony, that go, they're these X-factor players in Ga as well and in soccer and everything. If they get time and space on the ball, you know, they're going to hurt you. They're going to stretch you no matter what way you defend. Sometimes you can have a wall of defenders and they'll just pick a hole if they've space and they're coming, if it's stretched a little bit. So Keith Earls, he just has a really good knack of coming up with a big play and being in the right position, and his work rate is so high that he's continuously trying to look for the ball and he's looking for opportunities. And you know, look, he showed brilliant pace to score the try, but when he gets the pass for the second try, I'm talking about, it's that acceleration and that ability to kind of dive but touch the ball down in midair and make sure that he's getting that.
Yeah, he stayed low all the way through, didn't he?
You're talking about Keith, you know, Stockdale, maybe, you know, maybe he needs to do a few of those. But Keith Earls is around a long time. He's someone who I keep saying, and I hope people don't think he was rubbish before this, but the last 3 years, I think he's found a level of consistency that's just been immense. And he's openly spoke, I think he was Players Player of the Year last year. He openly spoke about being more relaxed in himself and before being psychologically too hard on himself, going high when the success, very, very low when it was disappointments. And just, you know, he's young kids and he's an incredibly nice, grounded young fleck. He's not a young fleck anymore. But I remember him as a kid coming to Munster and playing with him and just going, wow, this guy is incredibly talented. But so he's very measured.
He's a bit more perspective on it.
Totally. And he's spoken about that, just going, you know, he's going home to his kids and saying, look, there's a different thing, different life to sport. And sometimes that's important, and getting that balance right. So he's found his balance in the last few years. And, you know, you look at the disappointment 2 weeks ago in Cardiff where he was, him and his team were under so much pressure and that disappointment, and then they've got to dust yourself down in sport and go again. But I just thought he was superb. From Darren Sweetenham was brilliant. Someone who came into the game late and had so many high kicks to deal with and defended really well. So I think the big positives from Munster, obviously the obvious one is winning. That feel-good factor, that relief, that togetherness that you get from winning a game. And defensively, they were superb. They
were winning when not playing especially well.
Yeah, so they have to play better, and they'll know that themselves. And the concern is where the try is going to come from against Saracens and Joey Carberry.
Yeah.
Joey Carberry going off the hamstring is a big concern. You know, they had him back. He was such a boost to have him back in the group. And then he goes off and he's icing the hammer. They say it tightened up.
How many weeks has he got?
It's 3 weeks. It's Sunday, 2 weeks actually. So it'll be just, he would have just had over 3 weeks and a day to be ready for a game. So do you think he needs to be training like that whole week? Because he's got to test it now and make sure he's right. Yeah. But Tyler Blaindell as well, that was a positive. He comes on, that conversion from the touchline was superb. So that'll do him the world of good as well. So they're on the back foot, but they're in a good place now. And you know, I would, from analysing it from in the bigger picture, people won't expect them to win, but being another semi-final in the last four in Europe, it may end up being disappointing and they won't get their hands in the trophy this year, but it's something to build on for next year and maybe find a few more players and improve the overall
fixtures
standard.
There in front of us. Yeah, so Saracens are playing Munster April 20th. That's in Coventry, and then Leinster Toulouse April 21st in the Aviva. Very, very quickly before I let you go, very quick predictions. Who's going to win both semi-finals?
Leinster and Saracens.
They'll be in the final.
Yeah,
you heard it here.
I hope I'm wrong, of course.
Of course you hope you're wrong, yeah.
Well, no. I hope a Leinster Munster final, that would be incredible.
It'd be epic. It'd be amazing.
Newcastle.
Speaking St. of James epic, Park. Thank you very much, Alan,
pleasure.
For coming in. But speaking about epic, we now have a lady on the line all the way from Australia who's had a really good weekend. We have Ailish Considine. She's with us. Obviously, you had and Adelaide had a great weekend, Ailish.
Yeah, absolutely unbelievable. Just couldn't even imagine when I set foot here in Adelaide in November. Just absolutely amazing experience since I came over, and to actually get the opportunity to play in the grand final yesterday and, you know, come out with the right result. It's just been an absolute whirlwind of a year since I came over. So, unbelievable experience.
Yeah, when you say you came out here in November, you kind of realise that's only a few months ago. It's been some journey. I mean, can you describe to us your experience since you arrived there in November?
Yeah, like it's such a short time since I've been here. Yeah, literally came out in November, didn't know a single person here in Adelaide, didn't really know much about the place in general. And just as soon as I arrived, just the bond with the girls was incredible. Like the ethos is there, and the club itself has been absolutely amazing. And they've really made me feel so welcome. And like since I came in November, they've just offered me so much help, and you know, helped me develop as a player as much as possible in the short time I've been here. And they've, you know, put in the extra hours with me between whether it's extra skill work or it's extra video stuff. So since I came, it's just been absolutely amazing. And like the club itself and the place, it's incredible. And just so privileged to be able to play with them and now actually have a premiership with them.
I know the world is getting smaller, obviously, with flights and all that kind of stuff. But I hear your mother and your brother flew out on a flying visit. They're already gone home again. They flew out for the game.
Yeah, they did. They didn't book their flights until Tuesday, until I was cleared from the disciplinary stuff. And then they were only staying from Friday until Sunday night. So
you kind of put the pressure on them, didn't you?
Yeah, I kind of did for the last minute booking. They really only kind of wanted to be here just for the game, and the main reason, which I didn't know until she arrived, but my sister came to surprise me as well, and she couldn't.
Is that Emer, was it?
That was Emer, yeah. She couldn't take too much more time off work, so she was kind of.
For anyone who doesn't realise, Emer Considine plays at rugby for Ireland, so that's a real competitive family to have to be trying to keep up with their duties. Most sisters compete each other for like hairbrushes and parents' love and attention. You guys go out and make shows of each other on international stages.
For sure. So that's why they had such a short stay, because she had to get back for work. So just delighted to have them here, and they were just so happy to be here for the moment then. For the day that was in it, so yeah, they're currently in the air. I think they're almost in Ireland at this stage, but yeah, so they've a long journey ahead of them, and they won't know what's after hitting them after the short few days here.
It must be though some buzz to realise, you know, only left, you know, Ireland in November. You're over there, you're learning a new game, over ball, all that kind of stuff, and then to score a goal in front of a record crowd, something like 53,000 people at the Oval.
Yeah, 53,000, like absolutely insane. Like I think we were expecting about 25, maybe 30,000 at a push. Like that was that was what we were expecting. And yeah, incredible. The scoring a goal in front of that crowd and just hearing the roar. It just, wow, like it's gonna live on in my memory for a very long time. And I'm just so happy that, you know, my family were there to witness that and were able to see it and were there for, you know, the win. And yeah, just like one of my main highlights from sports has been playing in Croke Park and scoring a goal there, but this is just a whole other level. Like when you're talking about professional athletes and 50,000 people in front of you, it's just absolutely incredible.
And for anyone listening that might and watching this, they mightn't realise actually it hasn't been the complete fairy tale for you since you went out there. You've had to work hard to get into that team and stay in there and come out of it and go back in again.
Yeah, like they're a very, very competitive team. Any girl on the panel on the 30 could have made the team at any stage, because they're so talented as a bunch of players, and they're really, like, they're really good people behind it all, so they really work for each other. So, like, it was quite difficult to make it into the team, and I really didn't expect to get any game time when I came over in November. I was really kind of just there for the experience and just see how it would go and just experience the professional life and stuff. The fact that I even got one game, not to talk about having played, eight games this year for AFLW, has just been crazy. And then, yeah, like, I did get dropped for the GWS game, and, like, that was obviously hard because I played a couple of games before that, but I knew I didn't play very well against North Melbourne in that game, so I was kind of expecting it. But, yeah, I just put the head down, tried to work back into the team, and Doc gave me another chance to try and make my way back in. So that was against Melbourne in the last round. So, I was lucky enough to get back in and managed to hold on to my spot for the last few games and get to the final.
Is it harder to bounce back? Like, I know you played for Clare in football in Camogie, and it's always hard if you're dropped from any team, but at least maybe at home, you're at home, you have your home comforts. But so far away from home, to come home and not have the family support that you probably would have had at home for being dropped, it must have made it a little bit more difficult, because you're also thinking, I'm a professional athlete here now, I'm getting paid to be here, so I got to keep my game up or I'm gone.
Yeah, it was quite difficult because I would really depend on my family for that kind of support, like, as you do when times are, like, when you get dropped or, you know, you're finding support difficult and stuff, because you kind of need to take a step back and, like, you know, just have family time or whatever it is. So, yeah, it was quite difficult for the first couple of days, but, like, I'm lucky that, you know, I have FaceTime and I can ring them or call them at any stage, so it they were there able to support me. But yeah, it was quite difficult, not just to get a hug from your mother or from your sister or something, just the simple little things. But you just adjust. And to be fair, I've got great support network out here between the girls and the club. They've really, really made me feel at home since I came. So I'm very, very lucky to have had that and have that while I'm here.
Is there much contact between yourself and the other Irish women who went out? Because I know Yvonne Boner from Donegal, she went out. We had Cora Staunton, obviously, the trailblazer all her life. She blazed the trail out to Australia. Ashley McCarthy. And then Sarah Rowe, she's back in Ireland now, but she was out there as well. I think she'll be in studio with us at some stage this week as well. So did you guys, did you have a connection with each other, or is it once you go out there into different teams, you don't talk to each other?
No, not that we wouldn't talk to each other, but it's kind of difficult with me being in Adelaide and a couple of them being in Melbourne and Sydney. I was kind of away from them, but I would have known Ash pretty well. So you talked to her, and I got to meet her before we played Bulldogs in round one, and I got to meet Yvonne and Cora at the Sydney game. So, we kept in touch a little bit. There was never a thing where, no, you're not allowed to talk to them, you're not allowed to meet up with them at any stage. So, we wish each other good luck and stuff in games and all that kind of thing. So yeah, it's nice to know that you have a connection here, whether it be in Melbourne or Sydney, so it was good.
When are you coming home next?
Good question.
Or will we ever see you again?
Who knows? I don't really have any plans, and I intentionally didn't make any plans because I just kind of wanted to see how it would go. And hopefully, like, the plan is to hopefully get re-signed and potentially play again next year. So, but that's not in my hands at the moment yet. We'll have all those big meetings next week and the week after. So hopefully I'll get the opportunity to come back out and play another season.
Great. Well, Eilidh Constantine, thanks so much for giving us your time. I really appreciate it. And congratulations on such a great start. And hopefully we'll see more of you to come. Now, Liverpool beat Spurs 2-1 yesterday. Sorry to rub salt into the wound there, Anthony. Winning an injury time own goal. We have Brian Kerr on commentary. And here's what Brian made of it.
I'm loath to say they deserved it. I thought Spurs did enough in the second half to deserve to get something from the game. But they buckled at the end. And Liverpool were made courageous decisions and throwing on another forward, Origi, rather than going like for like, they took off a midfield player and went 4-2-4. It was an old 4-2-4. At times it was kind of like a 2-1-7. They had so many players forward chasing that winning goal. But Spurs had opportunities. Liverpool were very, very open on the counter-attack. And Sissoko had probably the most clear-cut chance of the whole game, and he blew it. He hasn't scored this season. in the league, in the Premier League for sure. He had the option of passing to Son. I think Van Dijk did very well to hold him up and to delay and force him into a position to take on the shot himself. I think he would have liked to release the pass to Son, but he still should have scored. And to balloon it over the bar was a bad error. And unfortunately, that ended up in a bit of a catastrophe for Spurs, because the concession of the late goal killed them altogether.
The late goal killed them altogether. I'm joined here by Sports Encyclopedia John Duggan, but more importantly, Spurs fan as well. How's the heart?
MT and Anthony, it's the heart is just dull and kind of depressed, to be honest. so I'll probably need, I don't know, porridge or ready break or something to get myself going this morning after yesterday's horror show at Anfield.
I'd love to throw in the TV out of the window meme.
Yeah, it was just that's how exactly I felt. Moussa Sissoko could have scored, should have scored. It went high into the. It should have been a Croke Park his effort, and then Dele Alli nearly chipped the goalie, and then Liverpool at the other end. Hugo Lloris, World Cup winner, makes a howler of mistake. Alderweireld bundles the ball home into the net, and Tottenham live up to the belief that I have of them as life's mirage. You know, you're walking through the desert, you feel like the water's getting closer every single year. You get there, and then there's just sand, and you know you're just wilting in the heat again. it's now 1 point out of 15. They haven't won since the 10th of February in the Premier League. If Arsenal win tonight, they're down to fourth on 61 points with Manchester United. Chelsea be on 60 points. And now they're struggling. A team that nearly won the league 3 years ago in that battle with Leicester, that have been third as well in the league, that they're now 16 points off Manchester City. They were in the conversation for the title not so long ago. As somebody said to me, Spurs will always let you down in the end, and they're living up to that. They're lacking a winning mentality. This is a massive rant to finish off the Ball AM this morning. But it is a team and a club that has lacked a winning mentality, despite how well they've been managed. And it couldn't come any better now, this move to the new stadium on Wednesday.
1 out of 15, I didn't realise it was that bad.
15, yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, I remember a couple of, maybe 2 months ago, maybe a month and a half ago, I was in here with the guys and Owen was saying, you know, what about, and I said, no, I said, they won't. I said, they'll falter. And it was before this run. And sure enough, they did. I was hoping they wouldn't, but of course they did. And I don't know what it is. I think
squad strength has got a lot to do with it. Yeah. No signings. You can't compete at this elite level. Graham Souness was talking on Sky yesterday about being at 98%, or not being at 100%, being at 98%. And if you don't bolster your squad, and like players like Harry Winks getting injured, you then, at the elite level, in the fine margins of a global game, and it was a good game yesterday, I thought. Yeah. It was an open game, more attacking than defending. You can't compete without that X factor of a squad. And Tottenham have lacked the squad strength that, you know, other teams have had, especially Manchester City, who have that interchangeable squad. So it's a real concern. And Hugo Lloris, a World Cup winner, they've big decisions to make now. Does he drop Hugo Lloris, a World Cup winner? He's made 8 mistakes leading to goals since August 2016. I think the BBC were quoting that stat. And Paulo Gazzaniga has played very well when he's come in. Do you drop a World Cup winning goalkeeper who's made a howler, cost you 2 points, and possibly really help Liverpool in this mystical way that they keep on finding results in their title push? 2 points clear of City now, and get into that stadium. I've been reading about the stadium and all the things they have in it and everything like that. So playing Crystal Palace on Wednesday, and just the home crowd, the excitement of a new stadium. Yeah. We saw Robbie Keane scoring the other day in a kind of a warm-up match, and Paul Gascoigne coming on. But a real worry.
See, I think going into a new stadium in the middle of a season is a ridiculous idea.
Well, it actually could be something that they need. There kind of needs to be a bit of positivity, I would imagine, around the supporters. And this will be a bit, because as bad as John is feeling here, you know, the Arden supporters there week in, week out, you can imagine, you know, after a run like that, 1 out of 15. So this at least will kind of deflect a bit of it, you know, into our new stadium. We get a win, hopefully, against Crystal Palace.
And you can't rely on the whole home advantage. I know you could say where they are now isn't home either, but the whole point of home advantage is you're familiar with it. They're going into a stadium they're not familiar with.
Yes, it is very, very strange. Like the stadium is extremely well designed. It's got a 17,500 kind of big section in the south stand, a bit like Dortmund's ground. 62,000 stadium. The acoustics are apparently amazing. What is the advantage, I think, is what you're getting at. What is the advantage coming in here now in April? Obviously, they wanted to get it before to the end of the season. They played well yesterday. On their day, they're capable of beating Manchester City in the two-legged Champions League quarter-final. Yeah. They're capable of winning one of the matches, but can they win both the matches? And the consistency is the issue.
And the strength and depth.
But I've been reading about the new stadium. Cashless payments. You can't use cash inside the stadium. They've got their own microbrewery. Which is called Beavertown, and the longest I think it was the goal line bar, that one of the longest bars in Europe, like in terms of length. All of the things that I'll be sampling hopefully soon. But
a team maybe
not in the Europa League next season, rather than the Champions League. This is like a billion pound stadium. You've got to be in the Champions League next season. So there's the hand wringing, there's the bed wetting, there's all the stuff that we're doing now as Spurs fans, and we've got another probably 6 weeks of pain to go through now.
You're looking at him in pain now, Anthony.
Just kind of give me some hope. At least he's gone over to the stadium. You know, at least John will share in the excitement of that. I haven't anything booked.
I'm just sick of it now. I'm just sick of being for 33 years led to the water, and I can't drink it.
Wow. That's deep, John.
It is. And on that note,
that's a good place to leave it, I think. We've had a really great morning here on OTB AM. Thank you, John. Thank you, Anthony, for getting up early despite being harangued by children and clocks going forward and everything over the weekend. And thank you at home for watching and listening. If you miss anything, you can get it back on offtheball.com. Owen will be back here tomorrow morning at 7:45 on OTB AM. And Off the Ball is back on your radios tonight from 7 o'clock. If you missed anything, don't forget you can catch up on all our social channels and also on the website. Sinead, slán go fóill.
So if you like this, you'll probably also like OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream or catch the show live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook or offtheball.com every morning from 7:45 a.m.